Welcome to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. And now, with our hosts, Eric Holson, Don Cleaver, and Ava LaRue.
Welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. Glad to have you guys with us this week. Ava, you're here.
I'm here.
Don is incognito. He's not.
He's here in spirit.
He's here in spirit. That's exactly right. We have a big show coming up for you guys. We're going to talk a little bit about what to do when the waters rise on the rivers and lakes. We're also a very odd noodling story. If you're familiar with noodling, that's a, kind of a unique thing. And also, what's going on in Iowa? How's the pheasant outlook look down there? That and a lot more when we come back. Stay tuned. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together we can make a difference.
Does your family need a break from the daily routine?
Hello, I'm Dr. Spruce. If you or someone you know needs a healthy dose of nature, visit discovertheforest.org and trade in the big screen for the big blue sky by visiting a local park or forest near you.
Hiking, picnicking, swimming, orienteering, climbing, admiring wildlife, or inhaling fresh air may result in heightened creativity, feelings of joy, harmony, satisfaction, and a euphoria that can only be explained as oneness with the natural world.
Whoa. Well, Ava, you're
well, Eric.
Here, and you're not soaking wet from this past week of...
You know, what a crazy week of weather we had here in Red Wing. Now it's hotter than Hades again.
Yeah.
Thick. She's thick out there.
Yes. It's funny, but you're best off just staying outside rather than going in and out to get the cold, the cool
Honestly,
air.
Honestly, though, because it once you feel AC, you're not going to want to go back out there.
No, and it, when you walk back out, it hits you like a brick wall. So it's a sad thing about it. But I will say this. One of the things that really comes out of this, there's a lot of lakes that we're looking to have some moisture, and they're definitely getting it. And the river is no exception. Same here down in Red Wing, along the Mississippi River. And, of course, as you go down further, as the water has a tendency to run downstream.
Is that what happens? No.
It finds a low point and keeps moving. A lot of times it stacks up, and unfortunately, Iowa, usually that's where it really hits the fan if we get a lot of water up here. And that's what looks like is going to be happening. But I will say the fishing is... not bad, just understanding what to do. And of course, the biggest challenge comes in when you're looking at fishing a current, any type of a river that has a lot of water from where it's at. You have increased flow, increased elevation, and you have some dirtier water conditions. So it makes it relatively difficult, except for a couple things. It really allows you to separate into those key spots. You're looking for those back eddies. You're looking for those spots that are going to be having that slower water condition and adjusting the jig accordingly, but don't go too heavy. Let that jig float, and those fish are going to be, you'll be able to pick them up. Now, the other area in the rivers, this is a key piece. Look for the slack, complete slack water areas where you have weed growth. It could be backwater, and you literally are going to have the smorgasbord. You're going to find bass, you'll find pike, you'll find... even, yes, walleye in 3 feet of water in that dingy, warm, weedy water, and a lot of different ways to approach it. A couple ways, obviously, jig. Another way to do it is throwing a paddle tail. And one of the nice parts about that is you can throw it a country mile. Wind is not a factor. and you can reel it and pull it through the weeds, generally will be relatively weedless. The other way is if you have the ability and the weeds aren't too thick, that works quite well as a rip and wrap. A rip and wrap, Rappler rip and wrap, what that does, it's got a rattle in it. It works great on the Great Lakes if you're looking at casting to certain areas on islands and rock piles where the big walleyes hang out. I've done it many times, and it is amazingly successful. But what it does is it has the rattle in it that will attract fish. Same thing with the bigger paddle tails. Don't be afraid to go to a 5-inch paddle tail. Go in a white paddle tail. Generally, the shad is something that's going to be a big fish attractant, that type of fish, or a bigger minnow that those fish in the midsummer really are going to go for. So really target those fish. Have a plan and just keep hitting multiple spots, but don't be afraid to jump into the, hey, let's do the smorgasbord program. Let's go see what we can find. Because a lot of times you get into that point where it's the, people call it the dog days of summer, but it's really not. It's the fish are biting somewhere. You just got to figure out where that is. And that target species could be everything, literally. If you're catching sheephead, it's still a lot of fun to feel that jerk in the end of it. Because you know what fishing is, don't you?
What?
One jerk waiting for another jerk at the end of the line.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what that is. But it really comes down to having a an ability to catch fish. And if you're catching fish, you know you're getting into the right areas. Don't be afraid to just change up the baits a little bit if you're in an active area and see if that's going to trigger the walleye. So maybe if you're having a hair jig, add a crawler to it. If you're same thing, maybe put a chunk of plastic that holds the skirt of either marabou or hair jig, and it'll slow the fall of that jig. So there's a lot of ways that you can vary up that presentation and make it effective for this time of year. So have fun with it. Prime example, going up to Lake of the Woods in July, I plan on bringing a lot of big paddle tails if we're going to do some vertical jigging, because I know normally we would jig with a minnow. I know if I put a big paddle tail on it, I've done this before, and it's amazing how many big fish you can catch.
Interesting.
And yeah, I only say that once, though. I'm not going to repeat myself.
Right.
It's kind of like when I do the seminars on jig fishing, I only talk about the color of the hair once, and that's deer hair and black. And it's gives off a different UV. And when the water's cloudy, you think, oh, I got to go bright green because they can see it. You got to remember, colors of that type need light to create the refraction and create the color. If you have black, it is absolutely the number one color for fish to see in a dirty water condition. So,
interesting.
Item of note. So that's kind of a cool kind of thing. Let me jump into this one story quick before we take a break. Oklahoma man strangles his noodling partner to death. In the Oklahoma, 50-year-old Larry Sanders reportedly strangled and killed his noodling partner. The two men have been noodling for catfish in the river when they apparently broke out in an altercation. He reportedly struck his buddy before strangling him. Local authorities, he reported to local authorities that he was arrested on an outstanding warrant and taken to jail. So he is now facing first-degree murder complaint. Yeah.
What was the reason?
They got into an argument.
Over what?
Well, he probably took over his noodling spot.
Get your foot out of my catfish hole.
Exactly.
Right now.
You know? I'm shoulder deep, and you want to tell me I'm in the wrong spot? Not happening. We'll be right back with more Valley Outdoors. Welcome back, everybody. As always, like to have you check us out. Where, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook, like us, please. And this next story is going to tie right into it. Kind of a, I think, a neat positive thing in the outdoors. Really, I do. I think it's positive. It's weather and nesting conditions in Iowa are very good for pheasants in the recent months. And, of course, you always like to make sure you have enough moisture for the young birds. And the population is expected to really benefit from this particular last year winter, which is mild, and an average spring. According to Iowa State climatologists, last winter was the fourth least snowy in 138 years, and the spring was normal for rainfall and temperature. So that's always a bonus, especially in the winter months. It's not a lot of snow that causes them to have a lot of stress. Given the statewide information, we're expecting good nesting effort, and our weather model is predicting pheasant populations will likely be higher for the 2025 hunting season. The upland bird biologist for Iowa Department of Natural Resources states the weather model is based on 50 years of weather data and roadside pheasant counts. He expects that there will be regional differences, but hopefully we can see nice increases in all survey regions. The DNR conducts its annual upland population survey each August, which is the best indicator of what populations will be this fall. Results from the August roadside survey will be available online September 15th. Reports of hens with chicks started in southern Iowa in the middle of May, and sightings have since been reported across the whole state. When you have early nesting years, we typically have the highest number of chicks, and it looks like 2025 will be an early nesting year. Hens begin incubating after the last egg is laid, and eggs hatch 23 days after incubation. And peak hatch in Iowa occurred June 10th through the 15th. Young pheasants begin to make short flights around 5 feet at 10 days old. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, geez.
10 days old and they're short flights and can keep up with the hen on longer flights after another 5 days. No way. Did you know that?
No, that's crazy.
You know, it's always important. I learn something every time I come on the show.
Me too.
Oh,
I
wait
think
a minute.
That's the goal.
Wait a minute.
I'm just saying.
I'm not supposed to. Well, yeah, I guess I'm supposed to learn because I'm doing all the research on it. Other story that's of note, the Iowa DNR and the Pheasants Forever, they're celebrating 100 years of pheasant hunting in the Hawkeye State of Iowa. The first season was held October 20 through the 22nd, 1925, when 13 counties in north-central Iowa were opened to pheasant hunting. Hunters were allowed a three-rooster limit for a half-day of hunting. An estimate of 75,000 hunters participated. Hunters can commemorate the 100th anniversary by purchasing a hard card featuring Iowa Pheasants Forever print of the year when they purchased the 2025 hunting fishing license. Information on places to hunt, the August roadside survey results, and more information available online by going to, that's right, you're going to go to thevalleyoutdoors.com because it's part of the Iowa DNR website.
Sweet.
How about that? You see how I tied that in? You like how I segued right into it? And I'm not talking about a very ugly two-wheeled machine. Paul Blart Mall Cop. But yeah, so you can find that information on any of the states and what's going on with the pheasant counts and roadside survey results on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Simply click on the state that you're looking going to. In this case, you're going to look for pheasant survey, and it will come up. So, kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a very effective way to not have to go down an absolute rabbit hole researching to see what those numbers are. So, take a look for yourself rather than trying to have me give you all the counties and everything. A new report out shows public supports hunting and recreational support shooting, but intention matters. And that story goes as this. The public support for hunting and sport shooting in the United States remains strong, but highly conditional is the terminology, according to the 2025 Americans' Attitudes Toward Hunting and Sport Shooting Report. That's a new national study conducted by Responsive Management for the Council to Advance Hunting and Shooting Sports. There was 2,200 surveys completed, and through scientifically rigorous survey, the new study reveals Americans are most likely to approve of hunting and shooting when motivated by food, conservation, or safety, as opposed to hunting for a trophy or certain species per se. The result confirms the Americans largely understand the value of ethical hunting and shooting sports, which is a big thing. And that's the Stephen Leith, a PhD executive director for the council. He said they also remind us that intention matters and maintaining public trust requires continuous outreach and education. You can't take that support for granted. Among the key findings, Ava, now here's the key piece of this. 73% of Americans approve of hunting and of legally regulated hunting, and 74% approve of sports shooting for recreational purposes. However, approval rates dropped sharply for trophy hunting and high fenced or captive animal harvest. Well, pretty much simple there. The insights provide a roadmap for policymakers, conservation leaders, and educators aiming at aligning messaging with programs and contents. The data set gives us clarity, Scott Levin said. He's the director of research and partnerships for that outlet. Whether you're designing policy, funding outreach, or running a recruitment, retention, and reactivation program, it's essential to understand where the public stands. The report offers detailed analysis comparing attitudes over time and across demographic and geographics, blah, 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 blah. Enough of that. The research is a strategic tool for advocacy and planning, blah, blah, blah. We're committed to ensuring this data informs real action, not just conversation, like I was just attributing to. You can find the full report on the American attitudes toward hunting and shooting sports. So it is available for download on the council website, CAHSS.org. So there you have it.
All right.
That's kind of the deal there. Bad news, kind of, or good news, depending on how you look at it. We had talked earlier this year, Ava, you remember we were talking about CWD testing in Wisconsin? And we're talking about the fact that a lot of the state representatives were removing testing requirements or CWD.
Right.
Because the implication was that they didn't want to have their particular county showing up as having a high content of CWD, which...
What you don't know can't hurt you?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they were eliminating testing because they're, it's there, but we don't really need to know. That's one of those things when it's not stated. I'm sorry, but if you're leaving the blank open to fill in, you lead yourself to the deduction of what exactly the reason is. It's pretty blatant if you're not going to state that reasoning. So this is a kind of step in the other direction. Testing for CWD will expand in Minnesota in 2025, and there's a ban on feeding deer too. I think you remember last year they had a ban. There was a ban in Wisconsin in certain areas because of CWD, and there was a big feed pile, and somebody, because they're having problems with rats eating the feed, they put rat killer next to the deer.
I remember that.
Remember that?
I still
stands out in my mind because I remember the landowner got fined, and something else, and then they found out the guy that was leasing the land, he got in trouble. But anyway, I digress. Last week, the DNR added 8 additional counties to a deer feeding and attractant ban, bringing the total of where the ban is in effect to 32 counties. It's in those new areas, too, where deer hunters can expect mandatory whitetail testing for chronic wasting disease. Comes the firearm opening weekend this fall. The feeding and attractant ban is one tool to reduce the unnatural congregating of deer and lower the risk of CWD spread. Paul Burr, the acting DNR Big Game Program Coordinator, in an agency news release, we use this tool where it provides the greatest benefit to the health of Minnesota whitetail. Added to the feeding and whitetail attractant ban were Anoka County, Clay County, Ramsey, Sherburne, Steele, Traverse, Wilkin, and Wright counties. So it's literally in the far, in this particular case, it's everything in the southeastern part of the state, from just to the northern Twin Cities of Anoka all the way down to the southern border of Minnesota. That's literally almost all the way a third of the state on the eastern side. With the addition of the new 8 counties with the banning, there are now 32 counties in the state. They prompted to move on this particular deal. Counties are in vicinity of where the CWD findings occurred last fall and winter's deer hunting season. First near Wheaton in west central Minnesota, Traverse County, deer permit area 271. Then later in the season, they had one near Holly, northwestern Clay County, as well as in the northwest metro near Greenfield in Hennepin County. All 3 whitetails were hunter harvested. And since July 1, a year ago, 96 wild deer have been tested positive for CWD. Eric Hildebrand, the DNR Wildlife Health Supervisor, and that, I used to work with his dad, Billy Hildebrand, at a radio station in Minneapolis, the outdoor station up there, and they're looking at how they can control it. Hildebrand said Monday it's unclear which areas surrounding CWB management areas will be classified as surveillance areas during the hunting season. In the first year, the testing have been found in the wild. We're going for bigger surveillance areas, Hildebrand added, that as of now the DNR has but one data point, a single deer in each of the three areas tested positive, and they want to cast a wider net. That TWD thing is crazy. You ever seen a deer that has that?
No, and I'm thankful.
It's so sad. Anytime if you see a deer that's standing out in the middle of wherever and it seems unaffected if you're nearby it, immediately call the DNR and let them know. It's really important to get that deer taken care of before it spreads to another section of the herd or that deer moves on to another group besides where it is at the moment. So he said the agency will invoke mandatory testing of hunter-harvested deer in the three new locations we talked about, both management and surveillance areas, during the opening weekend, 8th and 9th of November of the firearm season. And it's done in seasons past in other monitoring zones. He added that should no deer test positive for CWD in the three areas, the third year of monitoring, then the testing would cease. He added the CWD surveillance monitoring, the EPAs, where state and tribal entities plan to introduce elk from northwestern Minnesota, will not occur this year following no detections a year ago, which is great news. So I think when you look at this whole gig, it's unfortunate. But the eight counties where the ban is now in place join a list including the following counties. Just going to go through it. Aiken, Beltrami, Carver, Cass, Crow Wing, Dakota, Dodge, Fillmore, Goodhue, Hennepin, Houston, Hubbard, Itasca, Le Sueur, Maurer, Norman, Olmsted, Polk, Rice, Sibley, Wabasha, Washington, and Winona. So kind of a massive area that's covered.
No kidding.
You know, so it's
be aware.
Southeast and Northwest Central is part of the Minnesota gig. I apologize for being heavy on the Minnesota stories, but they seem to be at the forefront of the news. There's a lot of stuff happening. Yeah.
Always.
As it's going on right now, there's a bill that's passing the House and Senate, and Tim Wells signed before the regular season legacy bill. And originally, I think it's down from originally what it was budgeted. It was $2.3 billion, and the final approval was $1.19. Unfortunate. $796 million to the DNR, $300 to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, that's $305 million, $32 to the BWSR, and $28.7 million to the zoo. They wanted to nail down budgets. Legislators also had certain elements that passed. We talked about it last week. That was the shotgun-only firearms deering zone. It's now changed to incorporate rifle, and that's going to be allowed to have time frame to have people in their various counties address that for the 2026 season. So that's going to be a piece of that we want to look at. Let's see. Legislation also extended crossbow use for another year, allowing all hunters to use crossbows as a weapon of choice in respective fishing and archery game seasons. And the one we didn't talk about, I was going to get a hold of my friend Jimmy, who's been involved with this extensively. And this may be news to some of you. There is a creation of now year-round smallmouth and largemouth bass season. And multiple legislators had supported that for the 25-26 fishing season. The state's fishing regulation book, largemouth bass season, is catch and release only from May 10th to 23rd. And 24th through February 26th, anglers can keep combined six largemouth and smallmouth when it is open. Smallmouth season is catch and release two times during the year from May 10th to the 23rd and from September 8th to the February 22nd. while smallmouth catch and keep is May 24th to the 7th. So you can catch and have a season, simply catch and release, for those time frames. And when I'm managing a year-round season, the DNR is thinking the period that's used as close will now just become catch and release. Basically, anything is currently a harvest season would stay a harvest season. Anything that's not would become catch and release. That's kind of cool. You know? I like it.
Sure.
What do you
think? We'll take it.
Huh?
We'll take it.
I think it's awesome. The Northeast Bass Zone regulation will see a similar catch and release extension. So don't worry about it where it is in the state, but that is going to be the key piece. And as long as we can get the rulemaking process done, we aren't anticipating any problems with it, but we're anticipating March 1, 2026 is start date. And I think it's going to be a great thing.
Awesome.
Getting more people out in the field and kids out there having fun is always a plus.
Yep. We'll count it as a win.
Yep. So I think I'm going to go fishing out west, or east, I'm sorry. Go out east, because right here it's really soggy and don't want to deal with
it. Yeah, you don't want to stay here.
Nope. Kind of like smoking fish. They're soggy and hard to light. And I will leave you guys with that. For the Valley Outdoors, I'm Eric. For Ava and Don, wherever he may be, I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.